This program is brought to you by W.W. Norton and Company, publishers of Poetry Unbound by Padraic O Tuama. Now in paperback and featuring immersive reflections on 50 powerful poems.
My name is Thada J. Good. I'm the senior content editor at the Academy of American Poets. I'm so excited to be here in conversation today with Rosa Alcala, our Poem of Day guest editor for September 2021. Rosa, hi, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh gosh, of course. An honor and a real privilege to get to work with you on curating Poem of Day.
It's been so much fun. It was really great.
Good. I'm so glad. It's nice when you can kind of like have a nice time putting out culture.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like kind of rare these days.
Yeah.
So why don't we kind of get right into it? How did you approach curating Poem of Day?
Well, when I was asked to curate, we were in the middle of this pandemic that we're still in, and so I was thinking a lot about community and what that means, especially a poetry community. And, you know, I have these ongoing texts with friends who are also poets. And part of what we text besides our daily problems and things like that or our poems that we've read or poets that we're excited about. And it's sort of like, oh, my God, you know, have you read this? Or, you know, sharing people that we, you know, may not know about. You know, with or share poets that we really love with our friends who may not know about them. So in some ways, I was thinking like, that's what Poem a Day can be. It could be sort of inviting these readers into, you know, your world, you know, the world that includes the things that you read, the poets you're friends with, your influences, all of that. And it's kind of like that daily text to them, right? It's like, oh my God, read this, or isn't this cool? Or, you know, this is someone who I really love. Maybe you'll love them too. So on a basic level, it was about, you know, extending that conversation, right? Beyond a community of poets that I'm in conversation with on a daily basis to these readers who then become part of my community as well. But because it was also this pandemic, I was thinking about, you know, various topics. I was thinking about essential workers. So I was also reaching out to friends and being like, who's writing about work? Mm. And not all the poems sort of reflect that initial sort of search or thrust, right? But it was, you know, getting recommendations. Yeah, this poet was writing these interesting poems about work or class. And I was thinking about immigration as well, because we were at the end of this presidency that was really just so terrible for people, for migrants and immigrants, and many of my students who are in this bilingual MFA program who come from other countries. And so I wanted poets who wrote about that and poets who wrote about loss. And, you know, there were just a lot of things in the air that I thought, these are topics that I'm always interested in. I always read poems, you know, political poems, poems about these topics. But I thought, yeah, it's just, you know, things that we're thinking about now. And interestingly, one of the poets who, you know, is one of my big influences, Harriet Mullen, who I've, you know, been reading since, you know, my 20s and who I just really, really love. She sent a poem about, you know, the speaker sort of takes this walk and forgets her mask. Mm. You know, and at some point when I was making the final selection, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be interesting for the readers in September to think back on their own moments of sort of figuring out what they should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing, or is it okay to be here, not be here with a mask? And also there's kind of this interaction with the neighbor, and also the ways that we've rethought our relationship to our neighbors. And now that September is coming up, I realize that we're sort of back knee deep into the question of mask wearing. Whereas, you know, for a moment we thought, oh, like maybe we could let go of the mask if we're vaccinated. And, you know, so it's like that poem, you know, I thought was going to be read in one way, but it's going to be read in another. And I wonder what it's going to mean 6 months from now. So it's interesting to pick poems at a certain time for a month, not knowing what they're going to mean in many months, right, when it's finally published. So that was a sort of an interesting thing to see, and also not know what poets who I'm thinking, oh, they write about these things and I really like them because of this or this or this, and I want to share them, but then I'm surprised by what they send me, right? So I can't, you know, I just don't know what's going to happen. So you kind of start on one path and then end up somewhere else. It's even better, quite honestly, right? Because you can't sort of plan it. So I think it was all that. And then part of my community, and when I say community, I don't just mean people who I'm in contact with, but I think also like an imaginary community of shared affinities, you know, things that, you know, because some of these poets I know well, and some of these poets I don't, but I feel like they're still part of my poetry community. But many of those are poets who are thinking through other languages, who are translators, who are not originally from the US. And so those are included too, because that just reflects, like, you know, that larger community.
Yeah. And the way that, like the length and the breadth of this month, I really am thinking about what you said about this idea of work, because I think that it's threaded in different ways throughout the poems. And it's also a word that we've been seeing come up a lot, not just in this month, but throughout Poem A Day, like throughout the project of this year. Like, what work are we doing in these months that appear in Poem A Day 3 months later, 2 weeks later? Like, it's just the immediate feedback of the moment is kind of wild, in the way that it relates to like labor and work and the labor of the actual poem itself, as it, like you said, moves and changes once it's released into the world and becomes a part of history.
Yeah. And it's invisible work, right? Because you know, on your end, the work that goes into putting this together for the month. But I was also very aware when I was asking poets that there were, you know, everyone had pressures that they've never had before. So, you know, even to respond to an email or send me a poem, you know, I felt like there was this, you know, I'm really kind of overwhelmed here, or I don't know if I can get it to you by this date. And I felt the same way. I felt like, you know, some of us are, you know, homeschooling our kids when we never wanted to homeschool our kids, you know, and some of us, you know, are taking on extra things, or we're worried about our parents, or we're, you know, contributing to our communities because our communities are in need more than ever. And so there, you get a sense that, you know, this little poem, right, that is appearing in your, like, there's so much that had to happen, and so much space that needed to be cleared, and so much kind of, time that had to be set aside from something else just to make that happen.
Yes.
Right. So that's why I just, and then the reader, right, has to open up that email and take the time to read it when they probably have 50 emails they need to respond to that day. So yes, there's this labor. I think sometimes labor is talked about in these kind of very black and white ways, that like there's some kind of labor that's visible, or some kind of labor that But there's a lot of labor that the poem itself doesn't document, but it represents in invisible ways. Yeah.
And then I remember this thing that our first book award winner, Kemi Alabi, tweeted out a while ago, but it stays with me every day. It's like, they were like, if I am reading a poem and I realize that like I don't have the mental capacity, like the capacity to show up for that poem while I'm reading it, then that means that I need to rest.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a gauge for like, when do I need to just take a break from what's happening and take a nap or something.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. That fallow time, right? I mean, my friend Anna Maria Hahn, who's included in September, and she's someone who I text with regularly. She was saying that I was feeling very hard on myself for not finishing a book I'm working on. And she said, you know, fallow time is important. And I want to believe her, but I'm a Capricorn, so that's still like telling me something I don't understand. But that reminder, right, that we need that time to do nothing, right? But this year it's been so hard to be in that space of the doing nothing, even though we've been at home, right? And we haven't had a social life, but then suddenly everything becomes work, or everything becomes being at home. And, you know, I feel like I've worked harder this year than any other time and have had no break from, there's no separation from that, you know, this is work, this is home, it's been a lot, but I'm sure, you know, I've had it better than a lot of other people.
Yeah.
So.
And just the word fallow, just that word, where yeah. like has so much inside of it to like unpack and unmake. And like, you're already trying to unpack and unmake every aspect of your life.
Yeah.
Like even this, yeah. Gosh. Okay. So if you could direct readers to one poem in our collection at poets.org that you haven't curated, what would it be and why?
So this is a little bit cheating because it's actually a video, and it's from I'm trying to think, it was like Poetry Access TV or Free Access Poetry TV, but it's Bernadette Mayer reading Eve of Easter.
Yeah.
And you know, I fell in love with her work in my 20s, and fell in love sounds, you know, maybe that's not the way to say it. It's more like it just kind of rocked my world, right? It just like reading her in my 20s, and I was reading a lot of, you know, women poets, and I wasn't, you know, I hadn't read broadly or widely in my 20s. I don't know if I knew that much about poetry, but it was very different from any of the poets I was reading. I mean, women poets or otherwise, it just felt very, very different. And it felt very irreverent and funny and quirky. So, and Bernadette Mayer's in the month of September as well. She's one of these people I reached out to and was kind of like, I hope that she'll want to contribute. But Eve of Easter, I found years later. I think somebody probably posted it on social media, like, here's this video of a very young Bernadette Mayer reading this poem, and it's such a good poem, and it's about, you know, negotiating the expectations of gender, you know, when she was younger, but it still rings true, right? Like she's taking care of these babies that are the babies of Melville and Hawthorne, essentially, you know, and, you know, they get to write and do their work and be solitary while she's taking care of these babies. And I wrote down, because I listened to it again in preparation for the interview, I listened to this video again a couple of times today, and there's a terrific heroic couplet. I mean, I didn't scan it, but it sounds like a heroic couplet. So, I lost the prejudice of paradise and wound up caring for the babies of these guys. It's so good. I know, it's fantastic, right? And you just think, like, you know, the babies are, I think, references to her children, but they're also just, you know, metaphoric. Like, what did women have to tend to allow spaces for the, you know, solitary male genius to create. So that's the video that I would share, and I'm sure the poem can be found somewhere as well. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's my recommendation.
What is it? Who said that? A pure change happened. Rock my world. That is also a kind of falling in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or falling backwards into love, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Bernadette Meyer, a poet that takes my breath away.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I'm so excited for folks to read that poem. My God. So who are you reading right now?
So I got this book in the mail and I didn't order it. I didn't expect it. So it was just kind of this surprise. And people we get sent stuff, right? We're writers. We get sent stuff all the time. And I don't always get a chance to read it, but something was compelling about it. I don't know why. And I started reading it right away. And it's from the Unsung Masters series that I think is published by Gulf Coast, or they're one of the sort of co-publishers of it. And I think Kevin Prufer is kind of involved in the Unsung Masters series. I'm not sure, but it's an anthology of letters and poems by Srila Ray. And it's edited by Kazem Ali, who I know is the August editor, right? Kazem Ali and Rohan Chitri. And Srila Ray was a Indian American poet. She moved from India when she was 18 to come to school, and she went to Breadloaf. Like, she was one of the youngest, you know, guests at Breadloaf, or writers invited to go to Breadloaf. And I'm just blown away. You know, like, as the series is called Unsung Masters, so it's, you know, poets who have been forgotten or not properly recognized, didn't get the attention they deserve. But she obviously got a certain amount of attention early on in her career, and then just disappeared, you know. And Kazem writes in the introduction that one can argue that maybe it was the case of many women of her generation who had children, right? That he goes, but that doesn't completely explain it. Right. And then you realize it also, if you read the correspondence, that it, you know, she's also dealing with being objectified, but also being objectified, not just as a woman, but a woman of color, and navigating that very sort of white poetry world. So the book in and of itself is literary activism. It's just a beautiful tribute to her work. And I'm just so, you know, that work of recovery, I think, is so important, and it's so selfless in a lot of ways, right? For a poet to say, I'm going to do this work to bring back someone who is important to me, and to share their work. But the poems are so good. I mean, I could say all about literary activism and all this and that, but the work is so good. And then all of the ways that it's framed through the correspondence, through some of the essays in the back, through the introduction, is interesting, and kind of understanding, you know, we were saying about this kind of labor, these things that happen outside of the frame of the poem, and you get a sense of her life and what she struggled with, and her interests and her obsessions. But there's this little thread in the correspondence where that documents that she was not considered. Even though they were interested in the book that she published, she only published one book, she was not considered for a National Book Award because she wasn't a US citizen. And in the correspondence, it says something like, they refer to her as an illegal alien, and she takes issue with that. And she says, I refer to myself, I think, as a permanent resident. I can't remember what term now, but one was offensive and one was the one that she used that she considered not offensive. And she argued, like, You know, the US poetry world shaped me. I came to school here at 18. I mean, she went to Breadloaf. She published in the US. Like, at what point, what determines, you know, who represents the nation, you know, who represents, you know, the poetry of that place? And So her frustrations with that, she was very, very upset. And I just, it's just, it's such an interesting book and she's such an interesting poet. I so recommend this book. I think it just came out. But her poetry is just mind-blowingly good. I feel like I'm just repeating myself, but yeah, I'm very excited about it. And I've been texting, speaking of texting friends, I've been texting, I Instagrammed the cover, you know, I just kind of want to share it with everyone because I'm just discovering, you know, someone I'm like, what? She was writing when? And I never heard of her. It's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember around, maybe it was the day of the coup in January. Somebody tweeted out, I'm never on Twitter, but like, these are the things that stick in my brain. Somebody tweeted out, like America, like at its most beautiful is America at its most beautiful is the culmination of like the dreams of what this place could be as imagined by people who are not yet living as full citizens.
Yeah.
And it's like, what, like this, like, what truly are we doing when we cannot afford somebody basic wellness in anything, right? Like basic wellness in your community, which includes like, which has to include recognition. It has to include somebody saying, this is a wonderful thing while you're still around, you know? Yeah. And like this unarchiving work, it's so important. Very excited to hear about this poet from you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what are you currently working on now in your writing, teaching, and or publishing life?
Well, I've been trying for a long time to write this sort of poetic memoir. And I've published a lot of the poems in different places, but I've been trying to figure out how to shape the book and, you know, various ways that I've tried to shape it. I don't think this year has been the best year to finish a book, at least for me. You know, I know some people have found this isolation, a time of productivity and an ability to kind of, you know, shut other things out. I can't say that it has really been the case for me because I'm also parenting. So I'm like, you know, in isolation with other people who have needs that are not necessarily my needs. So I hope to finish it. The issue is that I listened to Kazem's interview the other day with you, and he was saying that he's going to be chair. Yeah, and so am I.
That's really exciting. Congratulations.
Thanks. But he said in the interview that he's not teaching and I am. So I'll still be teaching. I'll be teaching a little bit less, but we'll see. We'll see with this first year of you know, administrative work and learning how to do all of that, whether it'll give me time to finish it. But in any case, there's something on the horizon. It'll get done. I just finished translating some poems by Juan Felipe Herrera, a section of a book called Acrylica. And Acrylica was, he wrote the book in Spanish in the early 80s and it was published. And there's a previous translation of it available as well. But Noemi Press and Carmen Jimenez-Smith at Noemi Press wanted to, you know, gather a group of translators to retranslate it. And so it's going to be published by Noemi sometime next year. And Noemi has a series called the Acrylica series. So, and that was, you know, in tribute to Juan Felipe Herrera. So this, so it makes sense that she'd want to publish this book as well. So we just wrapped that up. Fareed Matouk and Carmen Jimenez-Smith are editing the book. So we just went over the final changes. So that's exciting. That's going to come out soon. And that's also a work of recovery. It's sort of bringing a book back, you know, by someone who you know, is very well known as a poet and as our former poet laureate, but perhaps this book isn't. So, yeah.
And the work of translation, I know that Grey Wolf put out this book a while ago that had work and then three different translations.
I love that. Yeah.
The way that it's laid out when you see different people translating work, I mean, it's phenomenal. It's incredibly prismatic thinking, all laid out on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great for someone. I must have heard about, how long has this book been out, the Grey Wolf book?
A while, at least 2 years.
Okay. I'm sure I've made a note of it, but it'd be great for my translation classes, because I often do that. I will teach poems translated by different translators and talk about, you know, their choices, because then you realize, and I think translation is often spoken about this way or talked about this way or critiqued this way. It's just like, well, why did they choose this word? Or I wouldn't have chosen that word, or this is a bad translation. And certainly one can talk about perhaps not a good translation in various ways, people who don't understand the cultural context or are, you know, I mean, there are problematic ways to translate. However, when you look at different translations, you realize that every micro choice can be based on different ways of reading it or has different impacts, not necessarily about right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that, and you might prefer one translation over another, but that doesn't make it a bad translation. So I'll have to remember that. I mean, I take a lot of notes, then I forget. But
I can also send you a link to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'll remember to do it, and then I'll order it. I'll have it on my desk.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's
hey.
Such a treat to work with you. And I hope you have a lovely day.
Thank you. I hope you do too. And I hope all the readers enjoy the month of September.
Poem A Day is the original daily poetry series featuring new work by today's poets. Produced by the Academy of American Poets, this free digital series is made possible by you, our readers and listeners. Learn more about Poem A Day, and if you can, please consider supporting this work by visiting poets.org/give.